Welcome into The Drive. Chris Landry in just moments at 7:30. We'll talk to Darren Collison of your Sacramento Kings ahead of tonight's Cavs-Kings game, or should I say Kings and Cavs. And we'll also get into a little bit the story that's emerging from Adrian Wojnarowski about Mark Cuban and the NBA Referees Association going at it. The refs asserting that Mark Cuban has been using intimidation and threats to scare referees for many years now, and they want Adam Silver to put a stop to it. So
nice.
We'll get into that in about a half an hour. I want to lead into Chris Landry with this story. I've had the luck of being able to play golf not once but twice with Bo Jackson. Twice. By the way, he plays golf exactly like you think he would. Just mashes the ball. Okay. He did an interview with USA Today. And what's interesting about Bo is this: most friendly guy in the world, will talk to you, shake hands, all that stuff, great on the golf course, will not take pictures with you, because he does not trust social media and he doesn't want it out. He will take a picture with you if you have an actual real, like, Canon camera to take a picture with. He will not take a picture with you with a cell phone, because he doesn't like his location being out immediately on social media. He's really nice about explaining it. I've seen him explain it many, many times to other people. But that's like, if you ever see Bo and you want to take a selfie with him, you better have a real camera, because he won't do it on a mobile phone. He told the USA Today, if I knew back then what I know now, I would have never played football. I wish I'd known about all those head injuries, but no one knew that. And the people that did know that, they wouldn't tell anyone. That's pretty interesting coming from a guy like Bo Jackson, as we welcome in Chris Landry. Chris, I'll just ask you a general question off the top of my head here about Bo. Is he to you the greatest pure football athlete you've ever seen, or would you put somebody else in there?
Oh, he's certainly up there. I think he's as unique an athlete as I've seen. Obviously, I saw him in college and saw him, play baseball and obviously at the collegiate level and obviously football at the college level, and then of course in the NFL. So he's certainly right up there. I don't know that I'd put anybody ahead of him.
I want to ask you real quick, too, before we get into NFL, we can wrap up last week's phenomenal game, Clemson-Alabama, and I remember going into it, you were saying it's going to be a fantastic game, and what do you know, 2 years in a row, they ought to just let those two play every freaking year. We're out here in 49er country and Raider country, but the Niners are going to have the number two pick in the draft. I am curious, from your point of view, being a former scout, do you project Deshaun Watson as a good or even fantastic pro? Or if you were in charge of the 49ers, and you should be interviewing, Chris, would you look to trade down and gather picks?
Well, I think certainly the quarterback position is of supreme importance, but, I learned a long time ago as a scout, you have to evaluate players, not create them. I think that Deshaun Watson has a chance to be a good player at the next level. He's a winner. He's a leader. I think he's got adequate arm strength, slightly above, not very accurate, and he needs a lot of work in his mechanics, because he's just not, doesn't know how to really feather the ball on the deep ball, doesn't put enough air under it. Got a lot of issues that, to me, it's not as good of a quarterback year, and that includes him as it was last year, or it's going to be next year. But if you need a quarterback, you're going to take him, you're going to take Kaiser, you're going to take Mitch Trubisky. They're gonna go in the first round, but they're going to be overdrafted like they are every year. I think what you have to do is you have to follow your evaluation. If you believe one of those guys can be a quality starting quarterback for you, you take them. And you don't care about what some people have ranked there, here or there. None of that matters. If you don't believe they are, then you need to move on, because I think it's too risky. It's kind of like Ryan Tannehill. That was a reach pick when the Dolphins took him as high as they did. Now, as we're further along, he's becoming a decent player. Is it worth it? Well, no, he certainly passed up better players in the top 10. But if they didn't have Ryan Tannehill, they wouldn't have even made the playoffs this year. So the reality is not just how good a quarterback is, but if you don't have one, then you have no chance to be competitive. So what is the price for a decent quarterback in the league? And you know what? It's pretty darn expensive.
Chris, I got to ask you, no real surprises in the wild card rounds, but now we're going into the divisional round, and you can't expect every home team to win. Are there any surprise games you got your eye on this weekend?
I think you know, to me, last week was a little more predictable because
Mm-hmm.
I think you had, you know, a couple of teams in there. In fact, I said last week, I think there were only three teams playing last week that were really what I would call threats, deep playoff caliber type teams. This week rather, it's the best week for NFL playoffs, the best weekend in the NFL, because you've got the best teams playing and you've got the teams that advanced from last week. I think, to me, Seattle and Atlanta is intriguing. I think Atlanta's best game wins it. I don't think Seattle plays as well on the road, obviously. So, but that is still intriguing. And then I think the Sunday games are pure gold potentially. I mean, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, to me is going to be outstanding. Curious to see how healthy Big Ben's going to be, and then Green Bay, Dallas, I think could be phenomenal as well. So, you know, again, who knows? We may have the great games, close games on Saturday, and we may have 10-point victories in the Sunday games. But certainly, to me, the Sunday games are more intriguing.
You know, Chris, I look at that Seahawks Falcons game, and I've been big on the Seahawks because there's two kinds of playoff experience. There's Seahawks playoff experience, and then there's the Falcons playoff experience. And Matt Ryan's been there, but we know how it ends. But then I keep thinking, man, I'm scared to death that they don't have Earl Thomas. Give me a reason why this game might not just end up in a boat race.
Well, I think I don't know that I can give you a good one. I think it would have to be just Atlanta being a little bit off their mark, and that's always the threat for a great offensive team. It's just like in basketball. What happens if you have a bad shooting night? Well, if you can't rebound, you can't play defense, you're going to be in trouble. I think what Atlanta's done this year is gradually become a great offense that has a great weapon in Julio Jones, but other complementary weapons that with a quarterback that is very good at going to his secondary and tertiary options, he can spread the football around. Great backs, two good backs, really, that can work the ball out of the backfield in the passing game. And here's the biggest and, is their pass rush has become really good. Their edge pass rush has become really good towards the end of the year. So get a lead rush to the passer. That's been their formula. And they've gone from, in my opinion, a team that didn't look like a playoff caliber team in about week six or eight to a team that's really good and I think has a great chance you know, to advance and maybe even, who knows, host the NFC Championship next week. But I think Seattle is not the same type of team on the road. Yes, they've got experience, but you just hit on it. How does Atlanta handle the moment? If you look at it, we always put a lot on that. Most of the time, it doesn't apply. Usually, if you've been really good and consistent, you carry that into the playoffs. But who knows? I mean, I think it's Atlanta's game to win or lose. I think their best game wins it. But what if they don't play their best game? What if they're a little bit off their mark? What if they can't control Russell Wilson outside the pocket? All those things are intriguing. What if Seattle can run the football a little bit on early downs? All those things would make for an intriguing game. And I think if it's a fourth quarter game and it's close, certainly a lot of pressure is going to be on Atlanta to win at home, or else this great run will, you know, be looked like as a big failure, even though it's been a great year.
Chris, tell everybody where they can read all your good stuff.
At LandryFootball.com, we break down, I got all the games broken down. We're obviously getting ready for free agency, the draft, recruiting. We've got all that stuff for you. We take you inside the film room, check it out. We've got discounts on there for you at LandryFootball.com. You're the owner and we're the general manager is how we approach it. So we think you'll love it. Check it out.
We appreciate talking to you as always, Chris. Enjoy the football weekend, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
You guys do the same. Thank you so much.
Thanks, all right, Chris. Thank you. That is Chris Landry.
We've talked a lot about it already. The Rams hire 30-year-old Sean McVay to be their new head coach. My question is, can you imagine yourself being a head coach at 30 years old?
Well, the answer is I can imagine it. But the other part of that answer
sure
is
can.
When I imagine it, I imagine it being a fireball of failure and horrific embarrassment. When I was 30 years old, I was still trying to figure out my way through the world. And granted, Sean McVay is probably just a better person than I am. Don't get me wrong, but I just wonder how he's going to get these big, giant professional athletes to listen to him.
Well, he's been doing it for a while.
But he's like the coach, like he's the assistant. Now he's the guy.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if other players are going to live and be like, dude, you didn't even play. Like, what do you know, child? Like, go color. That's what I worry about.
I don't worry about that as much just because I think that a lot of athletes have a lot of respect for people that are chosen to do that job, and they respect the fact that they have a lot on their plate. And so I think initially, especially, it's going to be okay. But I think more of the fact that when I was 30 years old, I was living in New York City working five jobs. Like, that's just such an early time in your professional life for most people.
Yeah.
And to think that he has this on his plate right now, I'm interested to see how it works out just in the sense of how he manages that step up. Because being the offensive coordinator and having that, it's a lot different when you're in that head chair and you deal with everything.
Hey, the coolest thing about being the youngest head coach to be hired in NFL history is that really increases the likelihood that you're going to be the youngest head coach that's fired in NFL history.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm ready. Jed, call me. I got the same resume as Jim Tom Sula, and I can bring you two wins. Let's do it.
The by the way, the youngest Super Bowl champion coach of all time, Mike Tomlin, 36 years old. Mm-hmm. That's a record.
I wonder
how
John Gruden feels about that.
Probably pretty bad.
Little people know that Nate Goodyear is actually a comedy impressionist. So
wait, what did you say? Little people?
Few people.
Oh, okay. Mad.
Hey,
wow, way to be.
People know.
Way to be controversial.
Hey, anyway.
Jeez.
Speaking of controversy, Jed York. Rumors say the Niners are down to Kyle Shanahan and Josh McDaniels for their new coach and are leaning towards McDaniels. Do you have a preference either way?
I don't have a preference because I'm not in those meetings, but I'll say that anybody that's going after McDaniels, I get it. You work for the Patriots. You have success there. But I almost think that that's a deterrent in my eyes. I think it should be, because to think that just because you've coached and worked for that organization that you're going to leave and continue, I don't think that gives enough credit to Bill Belichick. And so I would lead towards Kyle Shanahan right now, and I think he doesn't get enough credit for what he's done in Atlanta, so that would probably be my choice.
Josh McDaniels is my choice. I want nothing to do with Kyle Shanahan.
Ha!
First off, I don't want the idea of anyone that has had anything to do with the 49ers in the past, get them out. I'm done with teams trying to recapture the days of the past. You need to move forward. You need to find your own guy. That's Josh McDaniels. Have him build his own little empire. And if you fail that way, great. But I don't need Mike Shanahan's kid coming in and trying to pretend to be the next West Coast offense or whatever the hell.
You know, Katie, shockingly to a lot of people, every single thing you said in your answer, I absolutely couldn't be more opposite of what you just said. Right. I will lean way more towards a guy coming from a successful program. Just like if I'm drafting and I look at somebody that got their basketball education at Duke or at Kentucky or under a coach that has a proven record of turning out
not
talent.
Kansas.
Definitely not Kansas. You know, it certainly doesn't make it a slam dunk, but I think it helps. I think there's a reason why San Antonio Spurs coaches or ex-coaches now are so popular in the NBA, because you're coming from Popovich. You're coming from Belichick. You're coming from – same thing with Bill Walsh. Coaching trees, whether it was Parcells or Walsh or any of those, are a part of the history of the NFL that have a lot of Super Bowl championships littered amongst them. But that doesn't mean McDaniels is a surefire hit. That's who I'd lean towards for much of your reasons, because Shanahan – I don't want any part of that either.
Question for you, though, Nate, because
no.
Before the show, weren't you saying, you showing me some clips on the old cell phone saying, man, I don't think people give Matt Ryan enough credit. I might have to change my mind about that. Well, who's behind Matt Ryan?
No, I did not
yes,
say
you
that
did.
About Matt Ryan.
Oh,
I absolutely
controversy.
Did
yes,
not
you
say
did.
That about
Matt
Ryan. Controversy
oh,
on Friday
have
the
your
13th.
Copy. I was showing you Earl Thomas.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't listening. Obviously.
In my face.
I can see how she missed
him. I really wasn't listening, obviously.
I mean, to be fair, it was a clip from the Falcons-Seahawks game.
And I was doing my work, and you know how Nate is with his stuff
yes.
early, so
I
you
will
understand.
Stand in front of you here, Katie.
Hey, guys.
Yeah,
go
hi.
Ahead.
Sorry.
Third down?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I don't care.
Can we go ahead.
Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
Which road teams, if any, win this weekend?
If any?
Pittsburgh, if any. I you know what? No road teams, not for me this weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm gonna go on the other end, Seattle. And I'm gonna put it out there, and I think the answer will be somewhere in the middle. To be honest, I'm gonna say three road teams win this weekend.
Oh.
I think it's gonna be the exact opposite of last weekend. I think the Seahawks are gonna go into Atlanta and they're gonna eke one out there. I think the Steelers are gonna go into Arrowhead in Kansas City. I think they're gonna win that one. I think they're gonna win that one fairly comfortably. And yeah. I think it's going to be a fun offseason with Cowboy fan when Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, who have all the momentum in the world right now, go into Dallas. That's actually the one I'm least confident about,
really?
To be clear. But I'm going to say three of four road teams are going to win this weekend.
I kind of tend more to go in your direction, unfortunately.
Nate,
I think the Packers.
I
will say that the Cowboys are not getting enough credit and enough love for the regular season that they had, I do think that the Packers are on a tear right now. And this is not me as a Packers fan saying it. You just look at how this team has played over the last 6-7 weeks, and it's crazy. So I think them Steelers as well, I think, is a possibility.
Lightning round, which game is your must watch?
All right, yeah, this is tough. And for me, it's between the Packers, Cowboys, and Seahawks, Falcons. That's the 1-2 right there. I'm going to lean into the Seahawks, Falcons. Man, that to me is just going to be a tough, rough and tumble, goofy game. I'm going to be watching that, but both those games are going to be on my TV.
Oh, I'm going Packers, Cowboys. I think it's going to be a great game, not because I'm a Packers fan.
Rodgers, so cute.
There's only one game that sucks, you guys, and that's the New England game.
It is. You're right.
I'm going to choose the outdoor game, but let's be honest. This is the best football weekend of the year, every year.
Yep.
It's four playoff games, divisional round. Let's do this! I'm fired up for it.
I love
divisional round weekend. This is as good as it gets.
Sam Amick at 8 o'clock.
Give me the weather game.
We're also going to talk about Mark Cuban's war on referees, according to Adrian Wojnarowski in the referee union's memo that was stolen from the NBA. Also, Darren Collison coming up next. We're going to ask him about that little dust-up that he had with DeMarcus Cousins back in their last game and see if there's some major fallout from all of that.
Oh,
Jersey Mike's four-down territory sponsor. Visit their two Sacramento area locations, 624 Watt Avenue in the Arden Town Center and on Fulton Marconi in the Town and Country Village. Darren Collison in 4 minutes. No flipping. Sports 1140 KHDK. Darren Collison, 9 points and 4 assists in the last game on 4-10 shooting. He's been almost platooning, I think it's safe to say, with Ty Lawson at that point guard spot. Collison, 28 minutes, Lawson, 24 minutes, and Lawson didn't do much better. 8 points, 2 of 9 shooting, 2 assists. Collison.
Now, Lawson has better splits against righties, though.
Does he?
Yeah.
Is his VORP better? Whatever your analytics are. Collison only had one turnover to Ty Lawson's 4. So we'll get to Darren Collison. He's going to call in here in just a couple of minutes. I want to do a quick preview, a little bit of what we're going to talk about with Sam Amick at 8 o'clock from USA Today. Obviously, we'll talk to him about the trade scenarios here going on and rumors in the NBA. We'll get his thoughts on the national reaction to DeMarcus Cousins' potential contract extension and how much that did or did not surprise national media, who never seem, with the exception of Sam and maybe one or two others, to have a pulse on what goes on here. But there's a developing story in the NBA I want to tell you about involving the referees and Mark Cuban. Now, the Referees Association, this is according to Adrian Wojnarowski and The Vertical, are aggressively asserting that the NBA is kind of bowing down to Mark Cuban, charging him with pursuing a competitive advantage for his team, quote, via threats and intimidation towards game referees. Now, they got some memos that were recently distributed amongst the referees, including correspondence between the Refs Association and the NBA that described over a year of issues between the refs and the league office. The attorney for the Refs Association said, "We consider the threat to the integrity of NBA basketball presented by Mr. Cuban's misconduct to be real and growing." Mike Bass, who is the NBA spokesman, who never lets me get Adam Silver on the show, and I've been trying for like 2.5 years, seriously, but he's a good guy. Says, quote, "We have no specific response to the lawyer who represents the referees union. This approach is just the latest in a series of steps that he has taken in an attempt to undermine the necessary transparency we have brought to our game. We will not be deterred or distracted from continuing to focus on improving the officiating. Cuban responded saying to suggest I have an influence is to suggest that NBA officials can be influenced. I don't believe they can. The referees are saying Mark Cuban practices mocking NBA fines, NBA referees, by donating twice the fine dollar figure to charity. The abandonment of any enforcement action by the NBA that the NBA has communicated to Mr. Cuban, he can basically violate league rules with impunity. Basically, guys, what the refs association is saying is that they cited examples of Mark Cuban being on the floor, swearing at officials, telling them how bad they are, how stupid they are, whatever. Mark Cuban saying this is stupid.
In addition to that, he admittedly said that several years ago he sent a list of NBA officials to the league that had been in the league for several years but had never made the playoffs. So he's asking, why aren't we bringing in better officials than the ones that can't crack the top echelon? But it's interesting because, to me, Mark Cuban is a bit of a bully when it comes, because he is right down there on the sidelines.
Sure.
He's right down there. And it's not even just to the officials. He gets in the team's timeouts. He's talking to the coaching staff, to the players during the game. And I don't feel an owner should ever have that presence. But he is the ultimate, like, fan. And that's where I think his treatment of NBA officials paired with his power, I don't find this report to be – I don't really question it at this point.
They excite another owner, Robert Sarver of the Phoenix Suns, involved as well. And you have experience there.
Yeah.
They cited some examples, Nate. For example, number one – Cuban saying, using an official's first name and stating that you blank up this game and you ought to be ashamed of yourself. January 17th against San Antonio, it references Cuban calling a referee chicken blank. When the official looked in the direction of the bench to see who made the remark, Mark Cuban reportedly added, "That was me. I said it." He then followed up the comment with words to the effect of, quote, "You're horrible. You can report it." Robert Sarver once moved towards the floor in a game also against San Antonio, yelling that he considered a referee a blanking
ducking
disaster.
A ducking disaster.
I thought people could probably figure it out for themselves, but
hey, this just in.
But our cell phones can't, so.
People that own a professional sports franchise, a guy like that, a sociopath, I'm shocked. But that's what Mark Cuban is.
Sure.
Like, I don't understand. That's the only excuse for, and I mean, you know, maybe Robert Sarver to a lesser degree, but we know of Mark Cuban.
Okay.
Three NBA owners that you like, go.
I can't name three NBA owners off the top of my head. Mark Cuban. Dude, I generally like Mark Cuban, but he's a sociopath. There's nothing that gives him the right to talk to anyone like that, much less the officials. Like, you can't just get up there and say, "Hey, man, listen, if they can't be influenced, I don't believe that." So what I'm saying is not a jerk thing at all. Like, I'm not a jerk because I don't believe it affects them. That's nonsense, man.
Is Peter Holt the best NBA owner?
San Antonio Spurs?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think so.
Because I would have actually, if Jerry Colangelo were still an owner, I would have put him in that conversation as well. Because when he owned the Suns, you never saw him. He was not one of those owners that wanted to be present and seen all the time.
There you go.
He wanted to be behind the scenes.
I can't name because I don't know who the hell they are.
Here's the problem before we get to Darren Collison, as I see it. The commissioner of the NBA technically works for the NBA owners. Mm-hmm. The NBA helps control who and what refs ref and ref wear in the NBA. So, in effect, Mark Cuban is, by a couple of degrees of separation, the referee's boss.
Mm-hmm.
He is a game official. He is not a fan. So do I have a problem with Mark Cuban saying this stuff? Not necessarily. What I do have a problem with are NBA owners not being treated exactly like a bench coach by the referees. And when Mark Cuban says, "You're blanking horrible, you're chicken blank and effing up this game," that's a technical foul on Mark Cuban. And I'm going to tell you something. You want to talk about being a narcissist or a sociopath? When you have 18,000 people pissed off at you because in a close game, the other team's down there shooting a technical foul because you couldn't shut your mouth, that's going to take care of itself real quick. So for me, the control of the situation is very much in the referee's hands. Mm. Nothing is preventing them from calling a technical foul on the owner.
I think that's a little bit of wishful thinking, because when fouls get called and technical fouls get called, and they show it on the Jumbotron at games, home fans, even if it's the right call and it's against them, they boo. They don't agree with it, and you can have physical evidence right in front of you.
The point is, if Mike Cuban starts costing his team games, then it's going to sink in.
Especially with stuff when it's concerning technical fouls for things that are said,
right?
Which is, if an owner's saying it, if a player's saying it, that's even harder for fans to grasp. So I don't think that it would piss.
Who gives a damn what the fans think?
But to Dave's point, Nate, what he was saying.
You're saying it wouldn't deter Cuban?
No, it wouldn't.
Because the fans would be on his side.
They would be on his side.
I think that's a very valid point, that maybe that part of it, the embarrassment factor, may not deter him so much. I do think Nate's point
money's
also
not deterring him.
No, it won't. But the coaches and the players on the bench more than likely will have heard it, and more than likely will be raising an eyebrow at their owner. And that, to me, more than anything, is what would get to a guy like Mark Cuban because he considers himself one of the guys, a player, a coach, whatever. When they start looking at him and like, dude, seriously, we're out here playing. Coach is coach, parents, parent, you know, that kind of thing. If he starts costing his team points, I think it helps deter it, and I think it's incumbent upon the referees. It's an interesting situation. We'll talk to Sam Amick about it at about 8:05, well, exactly 8:05 when he comes on from USA Today. Right now on the phone, we got to get to him from your Sacramento Kings. Big game tonight against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he'll be bringing the ball up the floor and doing oh so much more. It is from UCLA, Darren Collison. Darren, it's Dave, Katie, and Nate. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Hey, I want to get this out of the way just real quick, because people like to make big deals out of things that maybe aren't as big of a deal on the floor. You and DeMarcus got into it the other game, and a lot of people saw it, and you went into the tunnel, and you figured it out somehow. Darren, I'm guessing this stuff happens a lot more on NBA teams than most people realize.
No, that's serious. I hate DeMarcus. I guess that's what people wanted to say, man. Me and DeMarcus, we've been knowing each other for a long time, on and off the court. We're like brothers, and, you know, every now and then, you know, emotions get high and gets the best of us, and you know, but you know, I was at his house the next day, you know, chopping it up with him and stuff. So that's just how it's always gonna be, you know what I mean? That's how brothers are. You never met a brother that you know that don't get into arguments, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, if you can dust it up and get back to your job, that's what it's all about. It happens every single time in the NBA. You see it with different teams. And, you know, some teams, you know, where players will get along pretty well after. But that's not the case with our team, you know what I mean? Me and DeMarcus have a great relationship, and that's how it's always going to be.
Well, and there's something that a lot of fans don't know about you. Both of you guys are very concerned with the environment. Rumor has it that you carpool to work.
Yeah, right.
Well, I know he doesn't like to drive, so that wouldn't surprise me at all. I know DeMarcus doesn't like to drive at all. I bet you Darren's a much better driver.
Cuz he takes me to practice sometimes. I don't feel like driving, you know what I mean? So I just make him an excuse so that, you know, my car not working, he picks me up. he gets mad because he always talks about I need to give him some gas money.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, if you believe what's out there, that guy's going to have his own gas pump in his backyard soon.
Yeah, that's good, dog.
You know, Darren, at this point in the season, you know, the playoffs are kind of within grasp a little bit, or at least playoff contention is. And I'm wondering, you know, there's been years in the past with this franchise where the season was practically over at this point, or at the very least, there were a lot bigger things going on than potential playoff contention. Inside the locker room, how has the attitude kind of changed with that blood in the water a little bit?
You know, I think the locker room has been fairly solid. You know, everybody understands that, you know, we have a good opportunity to make the playoffs. You know, it's kind of been an up and down season, but that was expected. You know, when you put a new roster together, you know, you're not going to click right away. But if you can look up around this time, you know, in the season and ask yourself, do you have a shot to make the playoffs? You're on the right path. So I think we're steady progressing. You know what I mean? I think guys are contributing in any different way. You know, one night this guy, another night this guy. And to me, that's what a playoff team is all about. You know, the different guys step up around your big player.
Darren Collison joining us on KHTK. And I don't know if you're like us. I really wish that teams like the Warriors and Cavs wouldn't, you know, get blown out or blow 24-point leads the game before they come to Sacramento. You guys have the Cavs tonight. Darren, I'll ask you this. You've been in the NBA a long time. I know if I was out there guarding LeBron James, I'd just have my mouth open because, oh, my God, it's LeBron James. Have you ever been starstruck by a player ever since you've been in the league?
By LeBron?
No, by any Anybody. Player. Like, when you were a rookie, were you ever starstruck by a guy you played against?
Yes. Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I used to watch Carmelo Anthony a lot, like, during his Syracuse days, and he just became one of my favorite players. So when I got a chance to see him my rookie year, like, I couldn't just stop staring at him. And that's when it really hit me that I was in the NBA. And then I had the flash really quick, and that, you know, some of these dudes that you starstruck, they don't really care that you're in the NBA or not. They're trying to go for your head. Carmelo Anthony is one of those guys. LeBron James, not so much. I was more impressed about how physical and big he was. But other than that, not too many players I got starstruck about.
Darren, what is having Kyle Korver on this Cavs team do for them?
It just gives LeBron and Kyrie more space to operate. Like, they need any more space. So,
right.
Those guys are very talented. You know, when you put shooters around them, it's hard to help, you know what I mean, because those are the primary ball handlers. And so it makes your job definitely difficult, you know what I mean? And it's a good pickup for them.
You know, Darren, I'll never forget the first time that I actually went to a game live that LeBron was participating in. And let's face it, the atmosphere is different when someone like that's in town. I mean, not just this transcendent superstar player, but you've got the defending champs. Anytime you get someone like that, it's kind of a different atmosphere when you come into the building. It almost feels like a playoff game in terms of the buzz of the crowd just during warmups. And I'm wondering, like, how do you guys feed off of that? Whether it's, you know, at home, you know, you see someone like that come in. What is that? Does that change anything for you guys, or is it just business as usual? Let's do this.
No, I mean, it gives you an alert that, you know, it is a huge game. You know, fortunately for our situation, every game has had meaning to it and is big for us. You know what I mean? So the fans have been doing a great job of showing up and supporting us, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think it will be no different. You know, we are playing the defending champs. That's the only thing that would be different. But other than that, you know, I think guys been in the position before and they understand what's going to happen on Friday.
Darren Collison joining us. You know, you are coming off a win and a real good win against Detroit. I won't lie to you. I never will. About the early third quarter, I was about as pissed as
Doomsday.
I've been at this team all year long. It was just gross. I mean, the effort, the execution, the whole thing, it was just rough to watch. And I'll just bet that as upset as me or any other Kings fan was, you guys were about three times as pissed, and it showed because, man, you came out in that fourth quarter and killed it.
Yeah, it's inexcusable. You know what I mean? One thing you can't never say is that you don't give it your all. You can't never say that you don't play with a lot of effort. And I think that's the most frustrating part. You know, you miss shots, you make turnovers, okay. But if the effort is not there, then that's just not good. And I think that was, like, the most frustrating part about that quarter. But we had that same issue in the first 5 minutes against the Warriors, too. So it's something that we have to look into, really dig deep and fix. And when we come out at halftime, it has to be more of a mental focus that, you know, we're gonna come out and play at a higher level, even when however we do start. So it's just inexcusable how we did play.
You know, and Darren, expecting 48 minutes of perfection, that's a little bit much, right? I mean, I get that, but there has to be part of you guys too that knows, you know, when you give away a defensive possession, say because of a lack of effort, and then you turn around, you try to tighten it up. There was a point where this Pistons team seemed like pretty much everything was going in, whether you were defending them or not. I mean, that's got to be a bit of a mental battle too, to just be like, gosh, we finally do get it right, and these guys can't miss. I guess my point is, you know, way to stick through it, but that's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating. Like you said, you never could put a perfect 48 minutes. You know what I mean, you look at you just got spoke about the defending champs, you know, blowing, you know, lead two to lose the game. So it happens to every team, you know what I mean, where you kind of lose focus and you kind of don't play the same way that you want to play throughout the game. But, it's part of the season. You're going to have, you know, some games where you're not going to be clicking, you know, some stretches throughout the game where you're not going to be clicking. But, you know, like I said, all in all, I definitely feel like we're in a good position right now. We have a chance to make the playoffs, and that's all we can ask for.
Last thing for you, Darren. Tonight, obviously, facing another great point guard in Kyrie Irving. How do you attack and game plan for someone like that?
It's tough, you know what I mean? Because, you know, he's one of those guys that can go either way off the dribble. You know, he doesn't have a weakness. He can shoot. He can drive. You know, he's good off the pick and roll. But, you know, you just got to stand your ground. You know what I mean? You got to be a little bit more physical with him. And with that being said, you know, he'll still make some tough shots. You know, you've seen the tough shots that he made against the Warriors, you know, even in the finals. So, you know, you just got to do your job. You got to continue to attack him on the opposite end and do what you do.
All right, Darren, well, I'm no coach, but I'll tell you this much. You check Kyrie Irving, hold him under 10, and you guys hold LeBron under 20, I think you're going to win the ball game.
Oh, that's easy.
That's simple. All right, buddy, we'll see you tonight. Thank you for your time. As always, good luck against the Cavs.
All right,
take care. That's Darren Collison, everybody. 7:53, time to get ready for the International Sportsmen's Expo coming to Cal Expo next Thursday through Sunday, January 19th to the 22nd. Sam Amick's going to join us in just a few minutes. You know, last night I ended up having the opportunity to give away some tickets, much like you do, Katie, on a regular basis, and you'll be doing later today on your Twitter, for tonight's Cavs and Kings game. So being the moron that I am, I decided to put it out to the fans, send in a video as to why DeMarcus Cousins should make the All-Star game and do a song or whatever.
Is that what that pug video
was? A lot of people responded. It was phenomenal. Here's one of our winners, and they ended up getting a 3-pack of tickets to tonight's game.
That is awesome.
That's fantastic effort. And that was Liam Brothers on Twitter. If you get bored today, that's still all over my timeline. We had a ton of responses. And at some point in the show, I'll try to play the other one, which is a little bit shorter. And it's a rap version as well. Just one guy. That was a family, including a little girl right in the front with an NBA vote sign. Sam Amick in 5 minutes. Don't go away. We'll talk about the national reaction to DeMarcus's potential extension and what's going on with this Mark Cuban referee stuff. That's next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.